Well, good morning, and thanks, Gene, for having me. Honored to be with you. Appreciate all the interaction that we've had over the years, and happy to be with you and Restore here this time. So, Ministry Renewal came out of my 17 years of being a pastor in the local church, and even before that, as a child, I saw generosity within the church, within my family, to my family, in ways that I didn't even really know how it affected me until much later in life. And in going through pastoral leadership in the local church, we began these engagements where we were trying to, we're growing. And so, how do we solve this? How do we resource this? How do we do new ministry? And so, we're figuring that out. We're scrambling, we're clawing, we're advancing. And it really became a process for me that I enjoyed at a time in my life where I was looking for kind of more of how I can invest in the local church, but work a little bit different. And so out of that experience, I went into this work of consulting with churches, many churches at a time, to help them claw and advance, and how do we resource this thing? And so I started the company, Ministry Renewal, to help churches increase generosity so that they can do more ministry, so that they can reach more people for Jesus.
Right on.
And so that's just been a wild ride. And looking back on some of my childhood and adulthood experiences about how different experiences in my life have shaped my biblical generosity and my actual generosity. And yet it seems like a daily battle that I always have to kind of review, okay, why do I view money that way? And why does money have that kind of attack on my heart in that way? And it's not something that I've conquered in any sense, but I've definitely seen how God has used so much in my life to help shape this perspective on biblical generosity.
Yeah, I love that. Why should people give to the local church? Because I think that's a lot of times that's a pushback. Why should I give money to this, right? So, and the other thing is, what premise do we have in the New Testament? These are some of the things we want to talk about, but what is there in the New Testament that would point us to the need to tithe, for example? And maybe we should just start with, what is the tithe? What is the tithe? And maybe you want to speak to that for a bit.
It's hard to navigate through the issue of what is a tithe without understanding what that came from even before there was this idea of a tithe, and that was the sacrifice. And the reason that within the Old Testament narrative, the reason they gave a sacrifice was this was an act of atonement. This was an act of
Correct.
Yahweh, Father, will you forgive me? Here is my cost. Here's my penance for my sin. And so the sacrifice was this idea of I want to be forgiven.
Right,
And
because
so,
the blood sacrifice was what God had required.
yes.
And instead of a human, like, all right, God, here I come. I'm sorry for my sin. I need something. I don't want to be that blood sacrifice. So God allowed for that
Yes.
animal sacrifice whose blood would be shed. So just a
Exactly. And then God always wanted the relationship with
yes.
the Israelites to be just that, a relationship, and not just this idea of, wow, I need to always have something to pay for what I'm doing. And so as the relationship with the Israelites from God's perspective, he was trying to change that. Later in the Old Testament, there's this instruction about a tithe, and that in the biblical definition of a tithe, it literally is one tenth. And so it's fascinating now as I work with churches across the country, whether it's Indiana, whether it's California, whether it's Oregon, whether it's a large church or a small church, this definition of a tithe has really become something of a common word around just giving. instead of the original definition within the Old Testament. And so when I think of the tithe and that definition, it is 1/10 of your income, and to give 1/10 of your income to the church.
Yeah.
And so God was asking the Israelites to do this out of a thankful heart. And so you see Psalm 50, you see in Malachi, you see this idea of give out of a heart of thanksgiving and give that 10th to the church out of that thanksgiving to God.
Right.
So then when we go in the New Testament, God has his son Jesus now, who is, he keeps, in my vernacular, he keeps poking people in the eye and saying, you know, hey, it's not just, you know, what money is, but what money does to you.
Right.
And so I don't think it is by mistake. I think it is very much intentional that we have the narrative of the rich young ruler, where Jesus says, can you give up what money has control on you? Can you give that up to serve me? And the rich young ruler says, I don't think I can do that. And so he goes on his way. The very next chapter is Zacchaeus. And this man who has idolized money in his life, who has chased money, who's pursued money, and has been wildly successful at it. Zacchaeus meets Jesus. And all of a sudden, his response is, wow, money is too big in my life. I need to give some of that away. And so now the whole 10th thing has been blown apart by Jesus and saying it's greater than this. But even within that, what is the tithe in this 10th? There is the Old Testament, give out of thanksgiving. And then in the New Testament, God loves a cheerful giver. And so my instruction, my understanding of biblical context is the tithe is 1/10 of our income. It is to be given out of thanksgiving and with a cheerful heart. And I always say to anyone who asks me, if you can't do it cheerfully, don't.
Right, right.
Because if we go back to Psalm 50, let's just kind of understand. Psalm 50 says, God is talking to the Israelites and he's saying, hey, listen, I see your sacrifice. Mm-hmm. I see what you give me. And you're trying to measure up by the amount you give. You're trying to measure up by the quality of what you give. Mm-hmm. And God says to them, listen, I already own all the cows. I already own everything that's out there. This isn't about you increasing God's bank account. This is about what God wants to do in your heart. And so God says, your $5, your $50, your $5,000, your $500,000, it doesn't matter. I want you to give out of a heart of thanksgiving. And so when we say, what is a tithe? Well, a tithe is a gift out of a cheerful heart that is 1/10 of your income or greater.
Mm-hmm. So, Mark, do you make a distinction between a tithe and sacrificial giving?
So Deborah and I have been married for 24 years, and from day one, we tithed 10%. And I don't know if Deborah and I actually had the conversation. If it was something like, should we tithe? Yes, we should. Okay, we will.
Yeah.
And now we just have. And so there came a point at which, after whatever number of years, the tithe was a place of comfort for us. That's what we had become used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like God was saying to us, this is the number. I want you to give this number. And that number was not a percentage. That number was just a hard number, which was beyond way 10% of what our income was. And my income fluctuates month to month, year to year. And we were just like, both agreed on that number. And so we did it. And during that next year, we gave more than we ever had before. We saved more than we ever had before. And so tithe, sacrificial giving, I think based on what Jesus gives us in the New Testament, he says kind of tithe, yes, but what is God asking you to do? And so when I look at sacrificial giving, I say that's discipleship. That's where God is discipling me, and I'm looking to be obedient into what he is asking me to do next. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think I differentiated in the sense that there's a clear definition behind what the tithe is biblically. Mm-hmm. And then sacrificial giving is kind of this idea of what's God actually asking me to do.
Right, right.
And for some, I mean, here's part of what I lean back into what I do every day, and I see church data, and I'm telling you, people don't jump from 0 to 10% in their giving. That's just a very rare occurrence for someone to start giving to the church. Their sacrificial giving might be 2%, 5%, whatever that is. That's a huge step for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the discipleship journey. So in the sacrificial giving sense, I say it's in relationship to where you are on the discipleship journey of giving. That's how I would view it.
Yeah, that's really good. I appreciate that. Because people, we sometimes make distinctions with some of this terminology. And I just want to make sure we get it as much of that on the table as we can. To your point about most people don't go from 0 to 10% in one jump. I would endorse that if you can, like, make that big jump, because mm-hmm. it is an amazing thing to watch God do more than you can ever ask or imagine yeah. when you are obedient to what he's calling you to. So, but that doesn't negate the effectiveness of starting somewhere. Yes. If we start somewhere, because for some of us, we have got ourselves in such a financial fix mm-hmm. that to go from 0 to 10% is just like we have to get there a little bit more gradually. Mm-hmm. I think what I love, though, is that whatever shift you make in your giving patterns, it requires a commitment. So whatever you do, it requires a commitment to whatever that decision is. Mm-hmm. Knowing that, here's where I'm headed. Here's where I believe, because if we believe the scripture, and you know, you mentioned some of the hard-hitting things that Jesus said about all of life, but about specifically about tithing in this situation or giving. Mm-hmm. He was talking in Matthew 23, he was talking to the Pharisees specifically, you know, and he said, among other things, wow, he was really getting on him that day. And he says, you hypocrites, you're so careful to tithe even the tiniest income from your herb gardens, but you ignore the more important aspects of the law, of justice, of mercy, and faith. And I love that, because he's, again, because we're human. Isn't this true, Mark? That because we're human, we tend to say, okay, what do I have to do? What is it? What are the very, how do I get favor with God? How do I step into favor with God? And if I can do something physically, well, then I can, like, especially with those of us that have love checklists, like if I can check that box and say, oh, whew, now I'm good with God because I gave, in this instance, I gave, I have to, like, every cent that I earn, like I got to make sure that I specifically tithe 10% on every cent I earn. If I am that fixated on every little detail, but then step out of, you know, that scenario into my workplace or into my community, and then I treat people poorly and I don't extend mercy and I don't extend grace. That's what Jesus was pointing to. Am I right? Like this is what he was pointing to in that moment, to say, yeah, like I care about the details too, but don't get so fixated on checking the box and forget about all these more important things, which is, he says, the tithe's important. Tithe, you should tithe, but you should give greater attention to the other details in your life. And what I love about this is that in my experience, when I commit to give, live generously, to tithe, that inherently has impacted those other qualities in my life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in the church since the day I was born, my parents were attending a church. And you'd always hear these stories of missionaries or, you know, people who are following God. And in your own mind, as you're hearing these stories, well, that's because those people have like amazing faith and I don't have amazing faith. And that stuff that happens to them where they go to their mailbox and they have this envelope that is a check for what they just ended up having to pay to repair their car and they didn't know what they were going to do next. And you hear these stories as a child and you think, wow, that's crazy. That only happens to like the people who like have real faith, right? And there were times even in our adult life where some of that kind of crazy stuff happened. And part of it was also God, you know, God using those instances in my life to really teach me something. We went through a time where it was tight. And I remember coming through a weekend where I was so filled with anxiety about, are we gonna make it? And the next week, selling my tools. Like I sold 2/3 of my tools so that we would have groceries the next week.
Oh man.
And you know, I grew up on a farm and the value of tools and having the right tools and even having tools you don't really need and, exactly. You know, selling my tools. And one of the realizations in my mind that happened over the last couple of months was kind of going back to that story of God. Remember when you made me sell my tools? I didn't like that. And, you know, what I'm saying to God is, God, I thought you were going to provide for me. I thought Yahweh, you know, Jehovah Jireh, you're my provider. I thought you were going to provide for me, God. And it was just like God quietly said to me, I did provide for you. Mm-hmm. I gave you those tools and you were able to use those tools to get what you needed.
Right.
And it just was, again, a reminder of how we take these things and we grab hold of them and they're not what we think they are, right? They're not this whatever status it's tools or it's fishing equipment or it's shoes or it's purses or it's whatever, right? It could be the littlest of things that don't make sense to me, but make sense to you. Mm-hmm. Whereas that's the trap, right? That's the place where money has control on us. And to this day, Gene, when I go to Home Depot, I've got to I can't go down the aisle with the new drills because they've got a really cool Milwaukee drill that I'd really like to have.
Deborah knows.
She knows. Yeah, she knows. But that control thing, right? I have to, it doesn't end today.
Yeah, right.
And so when I go into Home Depot, that's kind of like this. All right, we're not going to go down that aisle. I don't need that today.
Yeah, right.
I need these other things. And so I think part of the challenge is, again, it's a discipleship issue. Generosity is a discipleship issue. And it doesn't necessarily get solved and check the box and now we move on. It keeps creeping back into our hearts. And so I don't know if we want to, if we could ever go into a deeper conversation about Christian maturity and how maybe there are some areas of discipleship where we check the box and we can move on from that. But I don't know. Money just seems to be this thing that I don't think it gets solved and then we move on. But I think every day it becomes this idea of how do I want to live? How does God want me to live?
Absolutely. Yeah. And money is this, is the currency by which we are able to buy food, mm-hmm. pay the rent or the mortgage. And it is the thing that sustains us mm-hmm. Materially, right? Yep. So, and even physically. But it's this, and so this is the way I've always thought about it is that it sustains us physically and it gives us the material possessions we need to live our lives, but it does nothing to benefit our spiritual lives unless we tell it what to do instead of it telling us what to do.
That's right.
And I, that's been helpful for me to gain perspective on this whole thing of giving and living generously and how do I, what do I do about mm-hmm. the money situation in my life? Because you're right. I mean, it is just this thing that grabs a hold of our hearts if we're not careful, and manipulates us to believe that it is the most important thing that we have in our lives.
And make no mistake, money solves a lot of problems.
Absolutely.
Money takes care of a lot of problems and can make life appear easier. But money can also complicate things in ways you never imagined. And so this idea of it's going to solve all my problems and I'll be happy is clearly a farce. But it does solve problems. When you don't have money, you know what problems having money solves.
Oh man, yeah, yeah, for sure. And I, backing up to what you said about your story about having to sell your tools, for example, back in the mid-90s, Brenda and I owned a business that we eventually were able to, I barely sold it, kind of gave it away in many respects just to get out of it. And we thought we were, we really thought we were on the brink of, and we were on the brink of bankruptcy at that point. But it was prior to that, that we had started tithing. And so now we're like, we were okay, sort of okay financially at that point. But then we got into this situation where we thought bankruptcy was going to be the next thing. And during that time, we had people step up, and people we owed money to that just like cleaned the slate for us. No, you're good. No, you're good. I don't know how many people, vendors and individuals that had small businesses that chose to forgive those debts for us. That was, again, one of those like surreal moments where, first of all, it's incredibly humbling. But on the flip side of it is an incredible amount of gratefulness that God would let us be in relationship with people that would have the foresight or the generosity, if you will, both foresight and generosity, to know that that's they were listening to God, you know, in that moment. At least we choose to believe that, because they acted as God has acted. You know, God has through his son Jesus, like he sent Jesus and he wiped the slate clean for us. And that's what these people, they was representing Jesus to us in those moments. And wow, I think back on those situations, and it could have gone so differently. And yet people time and again stepped in to a place of generosity and forgiveness for me and Brenda personally. Like it was really a beautiful moment to experience that.
So it reminds me of the early church in Acts, where they're sitting around the room and the instruction to them is basically, listen, some of you don't have anything and you need help. Some of you have plenty and you can give help.
Yes.
But in order for that to happen, somebody has to raise their hand and say, I need help. And somebody else has to say, you know, I can help.
Right.
And it takes both of those actions, both of those acts of humility and kind of a spiritual step, if you will, that allow that to function in a way that within the early church, that Jesus had hoped through the disciples that they would get this idea of, and we can help each other. We can do something together and help each other in that way. And it takes both parts of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we've talked about the tithe. We've given some biblical principles behind it, why we would tithe. Just to be clear, if we're saying we are tithing, because I wanted to make sure we extrapolated this a bit, and we have, but just to kind of close that up, I have been involved with other non-for-profits, not just in the church world, but other non-for-profits. And they have also used the word tithe. And you said something about this, that the tithe is a 10%. But what if I say, well, I'd like to tithe, but I'm going to give 8% to my local church that I'm committed to, and I'm going to give the other 2% to the local not-for-profit that I'm involved with. What if I say I want to split that? I'm going to give 10%, but I'm just not going to give it all to the church.
Mm-hmm. So let me back out and kind of give a macro view of what I see happening within churches, within nonprofits. You know, as I study generosity that's happening in the United States, from a macro level, what I would tell you is there are so few people who are actually tithing a tenth of their income to the local church that nonprofits, those who are not within a church function, but within a charity position that is not under a church umbrella, mm-hmm. that nonprofits have to be their own advocates because the church doesn't have the resources to fund them. And so they become independent. So that, hey, notice us, see what we're doing, help us.
Right.
If everyone who was in the church, if half the people who were in the United States church gave a tenth of their income to the local church, mm-hmm. we could fund virtually every nonprofit to their capacity in the United States through that. Mm-hmm. Now, the good news, bad news of that is usually what happens is we go to our budget. So if giving were to go up, then a lot of churches would just chase that and expend that. But what I'm telling you is the capacity is there to fund the local church and the nonprofits.
Yeah.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. so come back to a little bit lower level of what happens individually in different places. What I typically find is when that question comes up, when I interview givers who kind of have this idea of, well, what if I give this percentage over here and this percentage over here? There's usually one of two reasons that that happens. My son started this nonprofit, or, you know, someone who's a dear friend of me is in this place and I'm really passionate about it. And so they want to kind of have this permission to, can I support this? Is that okay? And there's almost a cautionary eye towards, I don't want to hurt the church. I don't want to offend the church.
Sure.
But I really care about this. And I would go back to what God says, give with a cheerful heart. You know, figure it out for yourself. God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills.
Right.
He's not asking you to give because he needs his bank account to be at a certain level. Okay, so God's got it. I'm not worried about that. You work it out with God on your own generosity level, and then you be obedient in that way. Mm-hmm. The second place I often find that this question is born out of is this idea of, I don't trust you. I don't trust the church.
I mean, after all, don't church leaders just take the money and run?
All of them do. No, I'm kidding. No, that never. I don't know that happened. But we hear these stories, right? We hear exactly what you said. And Gene, you and I grew up in a generation where, as kids, we saw these pastors who had, you know, great amounts of resources or wealth available to them, and really kind of the first televangelists that we knew of, and they kind of they spoiled that, right? We grew up watching some of these guys, and they're, you know, many of the pastors that I coach are internally, once I can drill down and get to it, internally they're saying, I don't want to be that guy. Remember that guy? I don't want to be that guy. And so there is a caution from a lot of pastors to not be like, and naming names isn't imperative here, but just this idea of someone who, you know, kind of did what you mentioned there, is took the money and run, or abused the ability to have this kind of money. And it still happens today in a very, 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 very rare cases. But that's born out of this idea of, I don't trust you. I don't trust the church. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just say, Gene, you're a human. I'm a human. We have this kind of bent towards selfishness that we have to battle every day. And so no church leader is outside of that, but there's guardrails in place, right? There's elders, and there's finance people who are helping kind of keep things on track and on mission, and
right on,
being responsible with the dollars that we have. So What I would say is that happens in so few cases that unless you've got a deep wound there, that it did specifically happen to you, it might. And I'll just make this my words and not your words, Gene, so I can take the heat and you don't have to. It might have more to do with how you trust God or don't trust God than it does whether or not you really trust the church. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't trust God about my tools. I didn't come up until a couple of years later where I said, God, you took my tools. And so it's like, oh, is that really how I viewed that? Mm-hmm. And God says, but that's how I provided it for you. The tools helped you when you needed them. And now they helped you a second time when you sold them. And I think we just view things in such a way as once I accumulate something, I get to keep it. It's mine. Mm-hmm. And so I would just caution you, man. Now I'm at that age where I've seen people gain wealth and lose it over their lifetime. And it's just kind of like, wow, money is fleeting.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know, you wrap your arms around that and it's not going to keep you warm at night.
No. And I think that you said I've lived enough to, or you mentioned something about living enough to have seen what it does. And I just want to encourage people that the older you get, when you're young, when you're in your 20s and you're starting out, mm-hmm. Those decisions you make at that age really have impact on how you live when you get older.
Yeah.
And not only, I'm not just talking about financial planning, but I'm talking about your attitude towards your finances. And I've seen enough families get torn up over money matters.
Yeah.
And it just gets really, really ugly. Yeah. And so it's just significant that this is, you know, this is one of those topics that we as a church, honestly, when we launched in 2018 and we were planning in 2017 for the launch, one of the things that we were very cognizant of was that there's a number of us in leadership that had significant baggage around mm-hmm. how the church talks about money. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of came into this with a determination that we would be as transparent as possible, that we would be as authentic as possible about how we viewed giving and generosity. And we've tried to do that, but this is really the most in-depth conversation that Restore will have had to date around the topic of money. And part of that was intentional because the kind of church that we are, there are, it's not just some in leadership that have baggage around money, many that are attending and are part of our congregation have had negative experiences with churches and money.
Yeah.
And so there's a level of trust around that mm-hmm. We're trying so hard to be diligent to not break. In the process, though, here's my sense about it. In the process of these last almost 3 years now, we have kind of soft pedaled around this or tiptoed around this thing of giving. We often, every weekend, pretty much, you'll hear us invite people to invest in the work that happens at Restore. So that language, I'm just putting my cards on the table here. That language is intentional so that it gives a fresh perspective on what people may have heard in church up to date. And thinking through about, like, what is my giving? We don't often think of giving as being an investment per se, because when you invest something, you anticipate a return on that investment. Yeah. When we talk about investing at Restore, though, we anticipate a return on that investment because of the faithfulness of God. And so the intentionality around investment is not just to help people think differently about it, but it is also that reminder that when we give to the work of God, which we believe Restore is, then we can expect that in some form or fashion, and often in ways that we didn't anticipate, God reimburses us, if you will. He gives us the blessing we get from having trusted him enough to invest in the local church. I mean, it's just, I think it's again, this beautiful example of God's investment in us first. And we don't often say that, but wow, his investment in our spiritual lives, in every aspect of our life, yeah, through sending Jesus, is like, that's the ultimate generosity. Mm-hmm. And for us to then think through this process of, okay, I am part of this local church. Mm-hmm. I believe in the mission. I believe in the people that are in leadership. I regularly attend this church. I'm invested in the community. So what other reason would I have to not give to the local church that I'm a part of? Mm-hmm. And, you know, scripture tells us, don't give out of obligation. You already alluded to this. Don't give out of obligation, but give out of a place of gratefulness. Mm-hmm. And so I keep coming back in my thinking about this, to what does it take, Mark, in your experience as you've met with people across the nation about this topic, what does it take for someone to decide that this is the next right thing for me to do? Because what if my church that I'm attending doesn't have a big, hairy, audacious mission that I absolutely love? Like, what if they're just 50 people down the road that are just at it day after day? They're faithful in just meeting the obligations of the church budget. They're just faithful in their walk with Jesus, but they don't have huge plans. They don't have this mega, you know, church that they're going to plant new churches everywhere. And like, there's just not this huge, huge plan for or goal or mission forward for this church. So what if I'm attending one of those churches and a church like that doesn't really stimulate my imagination as much? Man, I don't know if I want to give to that church.
Yeah. I actually think that large church, you know, lights, you know, whatever you envision as that church that's got it going on, I would say to you, the percentages actually aren't that much different in terms of giving behaviors within a smaller church than they are within a larger church. It's just not really, there's more people, but the percentages of how people yep. behave aren't necessarily okay. that much different. Mm-hmm. So usually when I'm coaching churches, we try to have three tenets of action, or three tenets of communication we're trying to engage with folks to help them take a step into giving. And the first one is this idea that giving to the work of Christ does something in my soul that doesn't happen anywhere else. Okay. And so this would be back to our to the idea or the question of, well, what if I want to give to this nonprofit over here or this, yeah. you know, that's great. But let me tell you about the local church. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen in the local church is it's the best thing going. Mm-hmm. There is no other place in the world that provides the hope that the local church does. And number two, giving to make that happen does something in my soul that doesn't happen with when I give to, you know, the University of Notre Dame, or when I give to the hospital, or when I give to, you know, all those things are worthwhile. You know, two of our children were in the NICU, and one was in the NICU at South Bend for over a month, and his life was in the balance, and those people did miracles and gifted that man. That those people make a difference every day. They save lives. I mean, that's hugely important.
Sure.
And yet, I say to you, giving to the local church does something in your soul that can't happen, can't be replaced and re-supported in any other fashion except fueling the work of Christ. Mm-hmm. If you do some research on what generosity does psychologically to your own kind of persona and how you behave, you'll see very quickly that there is a direct link between generosity and joy. And I would tell you that I don't know that I've ever met someone who is both fully generous and angry. That person has, if they exist, I have not met them.
Uh-huh.
Generosity is directly connected to joy, directly connected.
Amen.
The second thing I would say is that within a church context, we want to help people know just like, how do I give? Mm-hmm. What are the mechanics of actually giving? You know, whether it's even if we go back and say, let's make sure you have margin in your life and you can actually do this. You can make this happen because it's available in your bank account. And then how do I give when I'm with the local church? And case in point, I don't have a checkbook. I don't carry a checkbook with me. I don't even carry cash. Partly because if I carry cash, one of my four kids is going to ask me for cash and I'm going to give it away before it ever gets a chance to be used. So I've got to be able to give electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super easy when I'm at Restore and I'm sitting there waiting for the church to start and boom, there comes a reminder on the screen. Oh yeah, I can do it right from my iPhone. Here we go. Boom. And I can give in that way. And I also like to do that in front of my kids so they can kind of see that I'm doing it. So I'm modeling it for them. I like that. So how do I give? What are the logistics? How do I actually go through the process of mechanically giving to my church? So let's review. The first thing is something happens to my soul when I give to the local church, when I fuel the work of Christ. The second thing is like, what are the mechanics of actually giving? And the third one, which isn't necessarily biblical, but it's important to us as American Christians, is this idea of, wow, my church is doing something that really matters. Mm-hmm. And I just said, it's not really biblical. I mean, Jesus doesn't say, give to your local church as long as they have like a great vision and it stirs your heart and makes you feel all gooey inside. That's not there. It's not in scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if your church doesn't have a big, hairy, audacious goal, it's fueling the work of Christ. Right. And I would also say, It's a circular kind of pattern of, we don't have money, so we don't have a big, hairy, audacious goal. Well, we don't have a big, hairy, audacious goal, so I don't want to give money to it. And it just keeps repeating itself over and over and over because the church is saying, we don't want to spend money we don't have. So we don't talk about things we can't do because then it just leads to disappointment.
Right, right.
And the person in the pew says, well, you don't have a big, hairy, audacious goal. I want you to do something that matters. Well, I won't give to it unless you have a... And so now we're just like, it was self-fulfilling prophecies.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you really dig down, if you really examine and take time to tell the stories of what's happening in a local church, to the size of Restore, smaller, larger, whatever you want to do, friends, you don't get to do even what you do at Restore without the generosity of God's people.
That's right.
Okay, and so when you say, wow, my church, we might, even as we each have different perspectives and kind of personal landmarks that lead us to our own view of generosity and the church's kind of incorporation of generosity, we each have our different perspectives on, well, what is a great thing for our church to do?
Mm-hmm.
But yet we can still agree on, man, there's some pretty cool things that happen.
Yeah.
And when we can tell that, we can just remind ourselves, that's pretty cool. We get to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would just say to you, you know, wow, my church, yeah, it's there, it happens. So we have that motivation. So it's, what does it do to my soul? It is how do I actually give? And then, man, my church is doing something that matters. I should consider giving to that. So when we work with churches, that's what we're trying to communicate to folks is those kind of a discipleship and an organizational perspective on where we're going.
And that's what I hope people of Restore hear in this conversation, and anyone else that happens to hear this, that It is this faithful one step at a time. Do I trust Jesus or don't I with every aspect of my life? And if I do, what is God calling me to do? And we can say all day long, well, I'm just waiting for God to tell me what to do. Friends, the scriptures clearly talk about what it means to live generously. And we don't have to sit around and wait till God gives us a special personal message about that. He's given it through his son, Jesus. And so as you consider this conversation, as you consider this teaching, consider what your next step might be as you invest in the work that happens at Restore. With that, Mark, I want to say how grateful I am for your friendship, for the value that you bring into my life, into our church's life. And I can't wait to see what God continues to do with your ministry and with your family's involvement here at Restore. Really grateful for this time together. And if we were in the room together, I'd ask everyone to show their appreciation. But since we're virtual, you guys just clap in your room, in your living room there if you want to. And we hope to see you all again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.